A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Hey, Herman and Corin. So I've mentioned before my delightful home inventory system in the course of many scintillating prompts, where we have discussed, among other things, the merits of NFC tags versus barcodes versus industrial grade paint markers, all these different types of things you can use to actually keep stock of all that random tech stuff you have around your apartment. And I've come full circle. I started out with the humble labels before realizing that they kind of faded after a year. Then I got into NFC tags before discovering that they just kind of came off really easily. Along the way, got some markers because I couldn't think of how else to put a number on something like a CPU holder. And then eventually came full circle back to labels through discovering industrial grade labels. These things are actually the most robust in my experience. Looking at actually what's stuck on and just not come off, because there's nothing more. I mean, labeling is not fun. Inventorizing is not fun. I did it because my cabinet, I couldn't find things for my projects. But there's nothing worse than going through the tedious process of numbering boxes only to then find after a year that all the NFC tags have come off. So those labels are pretty good. Now, here's what I was thinking the last day. Now that I have these labels on the boxes, right, the system is approximately, this is what keeps me out of chaos. I have a box, it's got a number, and the box is associated with the shelf. And likewise, let's take some tech part that I have, a bag of cables, that has a number on it. If you scan that, you get to the listing. It says, this goes in that box, you put it in the box, you put the box back on the shelf, and suddenly you can find the cable. In a few seconds, you can put the box back in a few seconds, but you've got two repetitive operations. Number one is you have a thing. You took out, let's say, a bag of quarter-inch adapters for a certain project, and you say, great, okay, let me put this back now so it doesn't... So we have the now beautifully organized workbench. So you want to just look that up. You know, you're not going to remember where every little thing belongs. I've got, like, I think 100 boxes at home. And it shows it. And then you've got, likewise, box to shelf. Now, I was thinking that Google Lens is a great technology. And now that this is a fully open source project that I'm building myself, why don't I integrate that into the system? Now, I asked my trusted, esteemed colleague, Mr. Claude. I said, okay, I've labeled all my stuff. Can we add a feature that it says scan? That opens your camera. You point the camera at something with a label, and this is where the labeling actually helps, because they're pretty clear. And then it identifies the text, and then either one of two things happen. One, it copies your clipboard, or more ideally, I have a little system now. The storage boxes are S, the items are A. If it's got an S, then this form the lookup string and jump to the item. Now, there is, Claude said that Gemini was my friend, Gemini 3.1, a vision model. And I have to say, I'm a little bit suspicious of that recommendation. Not that there's anything wrong with Gemini. It's certainly the light model is very cheap, but it seems like the wrong tool for the job to use the language model just to identify text from a moving camera feed, right? I'm envisioning something where you point it at the box, it identifies, and maybe you just click on it, or you click on another button. There's, to be honest, there's lots of ways it could be implemented, but Google Lens does a very nice implementation with a real-time camera feed. And I assume there's something in open source. If not, Vision would do the trick. But really curious to know, for this use case, if you were using something like live feed, where the camera might have to fixate on it. Now, Let me just tack on one more question, as I always do to my prompts. I mentioned that I'm using labels. Now, labeling, much like sticking on NFC tags, is also quite a mind-numbingly boring activity. So lately, I had a bunch of boxes that I needed to add, and I just used a permanent marker. It's readable. It says like box 21, but it's not the kind of pristine, very clear stuff you'll get out of a label printer. What about that second use case? If you had, maybe you're looking at a tool for a warehouse factory where people have used a mixture of printed labels, and as happens in any warehouse, my mom owned a picture framing store, so I used to work there growing up every summer, and then, you know, in a real life factory, even a small one, people label however they label, permanent marker. In that kind of a real world scenario, think about a mechanic store. Is there anything different? Would you recommend the same thing, or anything that can stand up to a bit more variability and imperfection in terms of how the text is actually written? This is a Vision AI question. Over to you two.
Daniel sent us this one. He's been building his home inventory system, the one with all the labeled boxes and shelves. He's come full circle on the labeling technology, settled on industrial-grade labels after trying NFC, see, tags and markers and everything else. Now he wants to add a scanning feature using the camera, where you point at a label and it reads the text and jumps to the right record. Claude recommended Gemini 3.1 for this, and Daniel's instinct is that a full language model feels like overkill for reading text off a camera feed. He's also asking about the second use case. What happens when the labels aren't pristine? When someone's used a permanent marker? When you're dealing with real-world warehouse messiness?
It is a good question, and his instinct is completely right. Also, quick note, DeepSeek V4 Pro is writing our script today. So if anything sounds unusually coherent, that's why.
I'll try not to take that personally.
Seriously, Daniel's suspicion about Gemini being the wrong tool. He's spot on. Using a large language model with vision capabilities for what is fundamentally an OCR problem is like using a flamethrower to light a candle. It'll work, but you're paying for a lot of capability you don't need, and the latency is going to be noticeable.
Walk me through why the latency matters here. He's pointing a camera at a box. How bad could it be?
Here's the thing with a real-time camera feed. Even if you're not doing continuous recognition, even if you're just snapping a frame and processing it, the user experience breaks down fast if there's a delay. With Gemini or any cloud-based vision language model, you're sending an image to a server, waiting for the model to process it, waiting for the response to come back. Best case, you're looking at maybe 800 milliseconds to a second and a half round trip. That sounds fine on paper, but when you're standing there holding a phone over a box, that second feels like an eternity. You start wondering if it's working. You move the camera, you try again. It's friction.
The alternative is something that runs locally on the device.
And this is where Daniel's instinct about open source OCR is the right path. There are two main contenders here, Tesseract and EasyOCR. Tesseract has been around forever. It's the granddaddy of open source OCR engines. Originally developed at Hewlett-Packard in the 80s, then open sourced, now maintained by Google. It's battle-tested, it's fast, it works offline, and it handles a huge range of languages.
I've heard the name Tesseract for years, but I've also heard people complain about it.
Yeah, the complaints are real. Tesseract's traditional pipeline expects clean, well-lit, high-contrast images. It works best on scanned documents. When you throw in a photo from a phone camera, especially if the lighting is uneven or the angle is off, the accuracy drops significantly. You have to do a lot of pre-processing. Binarization, deskewing, noise removal. It's not plug and play for a live camera scenario.
Tesseract is the reliable old workhorse that maybe struggles with the specific conditions Daniel's describing.
And then there's EasyOCR, which is newer. It came out of a research group in South Korea built on deep learning. It uses a convolutional neural network for feature extraction and then a recurrent neural network for sequence prediction. The key difference is that EasyOCR handles real-world images much better out of the box. It's more robust to varying lighting, different angles, different fonts. It's also got a simpler API if you're integrating it into a project.
What's the performance like?
On a modern phone, EasyOCR can process a frame in maybe 200 to 500 milliseconds locally. That's fast enough to feel responsive. Tesseract is actually faster on clean images, maybe 50 to 100 milliseconds, but the pre-processing overhead eats into that advantage when the image isn't perfect.
If Daniel's building this as an open source project himself, he's probably looking at EasyOCR for the main pipeline.
I'd say so. But there's another option that's worth mentioning, and it's the one Daniel actually referenced, Google Lens. Or more precisely, the technology behind Lens. Google has something called the MLKit Text Recognition A. P. I, which is available for both Android and iOS. It runs on device, it's free, and it's the same underlying technology that powers Lens for text recognition. The nice thing about MLKit is that it's specifically optimized for the mobile use case. It handles the live camera feed natively, it's got built-in support for different lighting conditions, and the API is dead simple.
That's the Google ecosystem play, though. Daniel said he's building this as an open-source project. Is MLKit open source?
It is not. And that's the trade-off. MLKit is free to use, but it's not open source. If Daniel cares about the project being fully open, EasyOCR or Tesseract is the way to go. If he just wants the best tool for the job and doesn't mind a dependency on Google's libraries, MLKit is probably the smoothest experience.
Let me push on something. Daniel mentioned a real-time camera feed where the camera might have to fixate on the label. That suggests he doesn't just want a snapshot, he wants something closer to what Lens does, where you hold the phone over something, and it recognizes the text continuously.
That's a more interesting technical challenge. Continuous recognition from a live feed means you're processing frames at maybe 10 to 15 frames per second. You need the recognition to be fast enough that the bounding box or the result updates in what feels like real time. MLKit handles this well because it's built for it. It gives you frame-by-frame text blocks with bounding boxes. EasyOCR can do it too, but you have to manage the frame pipeline yourself, which means dealing with Camera 2 APIs on Android or AV Foundation on iOS.
There's a build versus integrate decision here.
And Daniel's an active open source developer, so he might actually enjoy building that pipeline. But if the goal is to get the feature working quickly and reliably, MLKit is the pragmatic choice.
Let's talk about the second part of his question. The permanent marker scenario. He's got some boxes where he just wrote box 21 with a Sharpie instead of printing a label. And he mentions his mom's picture framing store, the reality of any warehouse or mechanic shop where labels are inconsistent.
This is where the problem gets genuinely interesting. Printed labels are easy for OCR because they're high contrast, consistent font, uniform size. Handwriting. Even printed handwriting with a marker introduces a whole set of variables. Stroke width varies. Characters might touch. The baseline might not be perfectly straight. The contrast might be lower depending on the surface.
Daniel's asking whether the same tool works for both, or whether he needs something different for the messy real-world case.
Here's where the research gets interesting. Traditional OCR engines like Tesseract have a much harder time with handwriting. Tesseract does have a handwriting mode, but it's trained on more structured handwriting datasets. Think forms and checks, not Sharpie on cardboard. EasyOCR handles it somewhat better because its deep learning backbone is more flexible, but it's still not great if the handwriting is sloppy.
This feels like the exact scenario where a vision language model actually might be the right tool.
I was waiting for you to get there.
Think about it. For the pristine label case, it's overkill. But for a messy Sharpie label on a textured surface with uneven lighting, the thing that makes large vision models overkill is also what makes them effective. They've seen so much varied training data that they can generalize to degraded or unusual text in a way that a dedicated OCR engine can't.
And this is where Claude's recommendation of Gemini actually makes sense, but not for the primary use case. For the primary use case, clean printed labels, use local OCR fast, cheap private. For the fallback case where the local OCR fails or the confidence score is low, that's when you might kick it up to a cloud vision model.
A tiered approach.
A tiered approach. And here's the thing, you can actually implement this pretty elegantly. EasyOCR and MLKit both give you confidence scores for each recognized text block. If the confidence is above some threshold, say 90%, you use that result immediately. If it's below, you snap a single frame, send it to Gemini or Claude's Vision API, and get a more robust read. The user experience is still fast most of the time, and the fallback only kicks in when it's actually needed.
That's clever. And Daniel's system already has the distinction between storage boxes and items, the SNA prefixes he mentioned. So the recognition doesn't even need to read a full sentence. It's looking for a letter and a number.
Which dramatically simplifies the problem. This is what I love about Daniel's approach. He's constrained the domain so tightly that the recognition task is almost trivial. You're not trying to read arbitrary text from any possible surface. You're looking for a pattern, the letter S or A followed by digits, on a surface that you control, in an environment you control.
The constraint is the feature.
And this is a principle that applies way beyond home inventory. When you're building any computer vision system, the more you can constrain the problem, the simpler and more reliable the solution becomes. A warehouse scanning system doesn't need to read every piece of text in the frame. It needs to find the barcode or the label number. A license plate reader doesn't need general OCR. It needs to recognize a very specific alphanumeric pattern in a very specific region of the image.
For Daniel's system, the recognition pipeline might be: grab a frame, run it through EasyOCR, filter the results for strings that match the S number or A number pattern, take the highest confidence match, and use that as the lookup key. If no match or low confidence, fall back to a cloud model.
That's the architecture I'd recommend. And there's one more piece that makes this even more robust, the label design itself. Daniel's already using industrial-grade labels, which is great. But if he's designing the system from scratch, he can also think about the label format to make it maximally machine readable.
What does that look like?
High contrast colors. White label with black text is ideal. A consistent font at a consistent size. Maybe even a simple border or registration mark that the vision system can use to locate the label quickly. If you really want to go all in, you could put a QR code next to the human readable number. Then the camera doesn't even need OCR. It just needs a QR reader, which is even faster and more reliable.
Daniel tried NFC tags, and they kept falling off. QR codes printed on the same industrial labels wouldn't have that problem.
But I suspect Daniel wants the human readable number to be the primary identifier, because that's what he's already labeled everything with. So the question is how to read that reliably, and the answer is a combination of good label design and a tiered recognition system.
Let me circle back to something you mentioned earlier, the on-device versus cloud trade-off. Daniel said he's building this as an open-source project. If everything runs locally, there's no API cost, no network dependency, no privacy concerns. If he adds a cloud fallback, he's introducing all three.
True, but the cloud fallback might only trigger on 5% of scans if the labels are well-designed and the local OCR is decent. And for a home inventory system, you're probably scanning a few dozen items a day at most. The cost is negligible. The network dependency is real, though if your internet is down, the fallback fails, so you'd want to handle that gracefully.
Cache, the last successful read, or just tell the user it couldn't read the label and ask them to type it in.
And that manual fallback should exist anyway, because no system is perfect. Even the best OCR will occasionally fail on a label that's partially obscured or damaged.
Daniel mentioned he's got about 100 boxes. That's a meaningful number. Enough that the scanning feature saves real time, but not so many that occasional manual entry is a deal breaker.
The time math on this is interesting. If each scan takes 2 seconds instead of 10 seconds of manual typing, and he scans maybe 20 items in a session, that's 2.5 minutes saved per session. Over a year of regular use, that's hours. And the psychological difference is bigger than the time. Removing friction makes you more likely to actually use the system consistently.
That's the real win. Daniel's whole project exists because he couldn't find things for his projects. The cabinet was chaos. The inventory system only works if he uses it, and he'll only use it if it's painless.
This is where the camera scanning feature is transformative. It's not just a nice to have. It's the difference between a system that requires discipline and a system that's effortless. You pull out a bag of quarter-inch adapters, you use them, you go to put them back, you point your phone at the bag, it says, "This goes in box S47. You put it in box S47. No typing, no searching, no remembering.
The bag has its own label, the box has its label, the system knows the relationship. It's almost like a physical file system.
It is exactly a physical file system. and the camera becomes the equivalent of a file browser. You're navigating your physical space with the same ease you navigate a directory tree.
Which makes me wonder, is there a case for doing this without labels at all? If the vision system is good enough, could it just recognize the object itself?
That's a much harder problem. Object recognition for generic tech parts, cables, adapters, CPU holders, is still not reliable enough for this use case. You'd need a model trained specifically on Daniel's inventory, and even then, a bag of quarter-inch adapters looks a lot like a bag of eighth-inch adapters. The label is the cheat code. It makes an impossible problem trivial.
The label is the cheat code. That's a good way to put it.
It's also worth noting that this principle shows up everywhere in industry. Amazon's warehouses don't try to recognize products by sight. They use barcodes on everything. The barcode is the interface between the physical object and the digital record. Daniel's labels serve the same function.
Let's talk about implementation specifics. If Daniel's building this as a web app or a progressive web app, what does the camera integration look like?
For a PWA, he'd use the Media Devices, APIE, specifically Get User Media, to access the camera feed. Then he'd draw frames to a canvas element and either process them with a JavaScript OCR library or send them to a backend, the JavaScript OC. R options are limited. Tesseract has a WebAssembly port called Tesseract.js, but it's slower than native. A better approach for a PWA might be to capture a frame, send it to a small backend service running EasyOCR, and return the result.
If it's a native mobile app, he can use MLKit directly, or bundle EasyOCR.
And for an open source project where he's the primary user, I'd probably go with a native Android app using MLKit for the primary pipeline, and maybe a Gemini fallback. It's the path of least resistance, and the MLKit API is pleasant to work with.
Even though it's not fully open source.
That's the trade-off he'd have to weigh. But I think there's a reasonable argument that the MLKit dependency is acceptable. It's a widely used Google library, it's well documented, and it's not going anywhere. It's not like depending on some obscure startup's API that might disappear next year.
And what about the real-time feed behavior he described? The thing where you point the camera and it just finds the label in the frame.
That's the part that makes the UX feel magical. MLKit's text recognition, API, has a mode specifically for this. It processes frames from the camera stream and returns detected text blocks with their positions. You can draw bounding boxes around the detected text in real time, which gives the user visual feedback that the system is working. Once the confidence on a particular text block crosses a threshold, you can lock onto it, extract the number, and navigate.
You'd want to filter for the SNA pattern, so it's not highlighting every piece of text in the frame.
The filter is what makes it feel smart instead of noisy. You only show bounding boxes around text that matches the label pattern. Everything else is ignored. The user points the camera at a shelf of boxes, and only the box labels light up.
That's a nice experience. It reminds me of those translation apps where you point the camera at a sign, and it overlays the translation.
And because it's simpler, it's more reliable. That's the lesson here. Constrain the problem, simplify the pipeline, and the reliability goes up.
Let's address the permanent marker scenario more directly. Daniel's got boxes where he just wrote box 21 with a Sharpie. What's the actual accuracy difference between EasyOCR and a vision model on that kind of input?
I haven't run a controlled experiment on Daniel's specific boxes, but based on what's been published, EasyOCR on clear handwriting with good contrast can hit around 90 to 95% accuracy for individual characters. On a short string like box 21, that's usually enough to get the whole thing right. But if the marker is fading, or the surface is textured, or the lighting is harsh, that accuracy drops fast, maybe to 70 or 80%. A vision model like Gemini or Claude with vision capabilities will typically be more robust in those degraded conditions because it's seen so many more examples of messy, real-world text.
The tiered approach really does make sense for his mixed environment.
And the nice thing is that the tiered approach is invisible to the user. They don't need to know whether the result came from local OCR or the cloud. It just works.
Or it just fails gracefully and asks them to type it.
Which, by the way, is a design principle that more apps should follow. If your automated system can't deliver a high-confidence result, don't guess. A wrong inventory lookup is worse than no lookup. Because if the system confidently tells you the wrong location, you put the item in the wrong box, and now your inventory is corrupted. The whole point of the system is trust. If you can't trust the lookup, you stop using it.
The failure mode here is not just inconvenience, it's data corruption.
And this is why I'd set the confidence threshold fairly high. Better to fall back to manual entry 10% of the time than to silently misidentify a label even 2% of the time.
Daniel mentioned Google Lens as a reference point for the UX he's aiming for. What is Lens actually doing under the hood?
Lens is interesting because it's not just OCR tech, it's a whole suite of vision capabilities. For text recognition specifically, it uses a combination of on-device models and cloud models depending on the task. The real-time text highlighting you see when you point Lens at a document, that's running on-device. The more sophisticated stuff, like translating text in an image or identifying products, goes to the cloud.
The on-device part is essentially what MLKit exposes.
MLKit is the developer-facing version of the same technology. Google took the text recognition models they built for Lens and packaged them into an API that other apps can use. It's a smart strategy. Lens is the demo, MLKit is the product.
Daniel could essentially replicate the Lens text scanning experience in his own app.
And for his specific use case, recognizing label numbers, he could make it even better than Lens because he's filtering for exactly the pattern he cares about. Lens has to handle any text in any language in any orientation. Daniel's app only has to handle S followed by digits.
The specialization advantage.
General tools are general. Specialized tools are better at the specific thing.
Let me ask a broader question. Daniel's been iterating on this inventory system for a while. He started with humble labels, moved to NFC, moved to markers, came back to labels. He's clearly someone who cares about getting the system right. Is there a point where the optimization becomes its own form of procrastination?
And I say this as someone who has spent an embarrassing amount of time optimizing my own systems. There's a term for this, yak shaving. You set out to organize your cables, and 3 weeks later you're building a custom computer vision pipeline for label recognition.
Is that what's happening here?
I don't think so, actually. Daniel's system is already built and working. He's not starting from scratch. He's adding a feature that would save time and reduce friction in his daily use. The labels are already on the boxes. The database is already populated. The scanning feature is the natural next step.
The fact that he's building it as an open source project suggests he's also interested in the technical challenge for its own sake.
Which is totally valid. Not everything has to be strictly utilitarian. Sometimes you build something because it's interesting, and if it also happens to be useful, that's a bonus.
To summarize the recommendation for Daniel, for the primary use case with printed labels, use local OCR, EasyOCR, or MLKit for fast, offline, cost-free recognition. For the fallback case with messy handwriting or low-confidence reads, use a cloud vision model. Design the label format to be maximally machine-readable. Filter recognition results for the S number and A number patterns. And always provide a manual entry fallback.
That's the core of it. I'd also add, if he's building this as a PWA, consider whether the WebAssembly path is worth the performance hit versus going native. And if he goes native, MLKit on Android is probably the smoothest path, even though it's not fully open source.
For the permanent marker scenario specifically,
the tiered approach handles it. The local OCR will work most of the time if the handwriting is reasonably clear. When it doesn't, the cloud model picks up the slack. The key is setting the confidence threshold correctly and failing gracefully.
One thing we haven't talked about. What about the actual user interface flow? He mentioned the system where scanning a label either copies to clipboard or forms a lookup string and jumps to the item. The second one seems much more useful.
Way more useful, copying to clipboard is an extra step. You still have to paste it somewhere. The ideal flow is, you open the app, you tap scan, you point the camera at a label, the app recognizes the number, and it immediately navigates to that item's detail page showing you where it belongs. That's one tap and one point. Everything else is automatic.
For the box and shelf relationship, if he scans a box, it should show what shelf it goes on. If he scans an item, it should show what box it goes in.
And the S and A prefixes make this unambiguous. The system knows immediately whether you're looking at a storage container or an item, and it can serve the appropriate information.
He also mentioned the possibility of clicking on the recognized text, like how Lens lets you tap on detected text blocks. That's a nice affordance, especially if there are multiple labels in the frame.
And it's relatively easy to implement with MLKit because the API returns bounding boxes for each text block. You just make those bounding boxes tappable. If the user taps one, you navigate. If they don't tap within a couple of seconds, you automatically navigate to the highest confidence match.
The auto-navigate behavior is interesting. It could be jarring if it fires on the wrong label.
That's why you'd want a brief delay, maybe 1 second, with a visual indicator showing which label is about to be selected. If the user sees it highlighting the wrong thing, they can move the camera or tap a different label. If they do nothing, it proceeds.
It's not fully automatic. It's automatic with an undo window.
And that small bit of user agency makes the experience feel controlled rather than chaotic.
I want to go back to something you said about the label as a cheat code. It strikes me that Daniel's whole system is a series of cheat codes. The labels cheat the vision problem. The SNA prefixes cheat the classification problem. The bulk shelf hierarchy cheats the spatial reasoning problem. Each layer constrains the problem just enough to make it solvable.
That's systems thinking. You don't solve the hard problem, you redesign the system so the hard problem doesn't exist. Instead of building an AI that can identify any object in any context, you put a label on the object. Instead of building a spatial reasoning system that can figure out where things go, you assign numbers and maintain a mapping table. The intelligence is in the system design, not in any single component.
That's probably the deeper lesson here. The AI is just one piece. The label design, the numbering scheme, the database schema, the user interface, all of those are equally important.
More important, arguably. A perfectly accurate OCR system feeding into a poorly designed database is still a broken system. A mediocre OCR system feeding into a well-designed database with good UX is a delight.
For anyone listening who's thinking about building something similar, start with the labels and the database. Get the boring stuff right. The camera scanning is the icing.
The icing is important, though. It's what makes you actually want to use the cake. One more thing I want to mention. There's a library called ZXing that's worth knowing about if Daniel ever wants to add barcode or QR code support. It's open source, it's fast, and it handles real-time camera scanning, combined with the label OCR. You could have a hybrid system where printed labels use the human-readable number and QR codes serve as a machine-readable backup.
Belt and suspenders.
For inventory systems, belt and suspenders is not a bad approach. Redundancy is your friend when the cost of failure is a corrupted inventory.
Daniel's labels are already industrial grade and not coming off, which solves the physical durability problem he had with NFC tags. Adding a QR code to the same label would be trivial at print time.
Then you've got three layers of recognition, QR code first because it's fastest and most reliable, then OCR of the printed number, then Cloud Vision fallback. The QR code works in a fraction of a second. The OCRR works in a few hundred milliseconds. The cloud fallback takes a second but almost never fails.
That's a robust pipeline.
It's what I'd build if I were doing this for myself. And honestly, it's not that much more work than just doing the OCR. The QR code library is a drop-in addition.
Let's talk about one more edge case Daniel mentioned, the mechanic shop scenario. In a real workshop, you've got grease, you've got dirt, labels get damaged. The recognition system has to handle degradation over time.
This is where the Cloud Vision models really shine. They've been trained on such a wide variety of real-world images that they can read text that's partially obscured, faded, or dirty in a way that traditional OCR simply can't. There was a paper from a couple of years ago showing that vision language models could read text through significant occlusions, like a label that's 60% covered in grease, with accuracy that was 30 to 40 points higher than Tesseract.
30 to 40 points is not marginal. That's the difference between usable and useless.
And in a commercial setting, a mechanic shop, a warehouse, a factory floor, that robustness is worth paying for. The cloud API cost is trivial compared to the labor cost of manual data entry or the error cost of misidentified parts.
For Daniel's home use, the tiered approach is a nice optimization. For a commercial deployment, the cloud model might actually be the primary pipeline.
And that's the thing about engineering decisions. The right answer depends on the context. Home inventory with 100 boxes? Local OCR is fine? Cloud fallback is a safety net? Warehouse with 10,000 SKUs and harsh conditions? Cloud first, with local as the fallback for when the network is down.
The constraints dictate the architecture.
Anyone who tells you there's one right way to build a system without asking about the constraints is selling something.
Daniel's instinct was right. Gemini is overkill for his primary use case. But Claude wasn't wrong either. Gemini is the right tool for the hard cases. The nuance is in knowing which tool to use when.
That's the skill. Not knowing one tool, but knowing the trade-offs between tools and how to combine them. Daniel's already demonstrated that skill by iterating through labels, NFC tags, and markers before settling on what works. The camera scanning feature is just the next iteration of that same process.
It's also worth noting that this whole conversation is possible because Daniel built the system himself. If he were using off-the-shelf inventory software, he wouldn't have the option to add custom camera scanning with pattern-matched label recognition.
The open source advantage. When you own the code, you can make it do exactly what you need. The trade-off is you have to actually build it.
Which, for Daniel, seems to be part of the fun.
It's definitely part of the fun.
Alright, let's wrap the technical discussion. The recommendation is clear. Local OCR for speed and cost, Cloud Vision for robustness, tiered architecture with graceful fallback, and design the labels to be machine-readable from the start. For the permanent marker scenario, the tiered approach handles it naturally. Local OCR tries first. Cloud model catches the hard cases.
If he wants to go further, add QR codes as the fastest and most reliable layer. But even without that, the system as described will work well.
Daniel's going to have a very satisfying moment the first time he points his phone at a bag of cables, and it instantly tells him exactly which box it belongs in.
That moment when the system you built actually works, there's nothing quite like it.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In the 1880s, the first detailed bathymetric survey of Lake Tanganyika was completed, revealing it to be the second deepest lake in the world at 4,710 feet, a discovery that reshaped European understanding of the African Rift Valley's geological scale.
4,700 feet. That is a very deep lake.
I did not know Lake Tanganyika was that deep. Hilbert continues to surprise.
This has been My Weird Prompts. Thanks to our producer, Hilbert Flumingtop, for keeping this show running. If you want more episodes like this one, head over to myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon with another prompt from Daniel.
This episode was generated using Gemini Flash 3. Text-to-speech engine was Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.